You're listening to This Week in Fantasy Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. I'm Lee Keller, joined by John Kuh. In this episode, we will recap the hitter and pitcher performances from this past week, talk about the latest news around baseball, including a lengthy list of injuries, and of course, give you all some streamer recommendations for next week. But before we get into all of that, John, how's your week been?
Not bad. I've been kind of frustrated with my home league because we've had a lot of decent players get dropped and some crazy fab bids and... Sometimes you bid $50 on O'Neill Cruz, and the next highest bid is $5, and you wonder what the heck is going on with your league.
What?
Yep.
So O'Neill Cruz was dropped in your home league.
That's correct, yep.
And then you bid $50.
Yep.
Which, rightfully so, and the runner-up was $5.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Well, do you have any open spots in your home league? I would like to join.
If you want to hear the fun list, in the last 2 weeks, we've had O'Neill Cruz was dropped, like I mentioned. George Kirby was dropped. Yusei Kikuchi was dropped, and Chris Bassett was dropped.
Wow.
I picked up two of those guys. I missed out on George Kirby. Someone actually bothered to pay. It's $150 total budget. So someone actually paid like $110 for him, which is like, okay, fine. I get that.
Yeah.
But it's weird. It's like it's an 11 teamer. We're playing with like relatively shallow rosters, you know, three outfield, only one util, no middle, no corner infield. So I could maybe understand like dropping O'Neill Cruz in an 11 teamer where there's only one shortstop spot, but man, some of the transactions in this league, just they're fun, but they're annoying.
Yeah, I mean, my home league is a 10-team league. It is a keeper league, but like O'Neill Cruz would never be dropped. Like, there are rarely any big names dropped that shouldn't be dropped in our league, mm-hmm. which I'm kind of proud of my league for, so shout out to anybody from my league if you're listening. We're pretty smart, and even though it's a 10-team league, there's always the tough decisions on who do you roster, who do you cut, who do you get rid of? But honestly, I don't think we would see a big drop like that, which is crazy. I mean, that's fun for you because you can just get these studs for the cheap.
Oh, so yeah, totally.
That's definitely a cool option. I think the only person last season that was like, wow, why did that person drop that guy, was Tarik Skubal towards the end of the year.
Okay.
But that was because they were in a playoff race and they needed someone to stream, and that was the last outing for Skubal.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't really need him anymore, but they got picked up immediately and Skubal got kept, of course. So like that was the only head scratcher, like, wow, why did you drop that guy? But that wasn't that bad considering the context. So hearing O'Neill Cruz already being dropped just 2 weeks into the season, that's a head scratcher for me.
Yeah. I mean, like, there's some respects where it's an OBP slugging league and he hasn't been, you know, the hottest player in those categories. But yeah, I just don't see a reason to drop O'Neill Cruz. But yeah, you know, that's fantasy baseball, right? Sometimes it doesn't go exactly the way that you expect, and you just have to react to it.
Yeah, hey, that's a big win for you, man. I'm happy for you. Congrats on getting O'Neill Cruz.
I will take the win. It kind of sucks. I could have gotten him for $6, but whatever, I'll pay $50.
That's just crazy. But hey, you paid fair, so we'll take it. But before we get into the rest of this podcast, just a reminder that all of you can follow our podcast on Twitter at ThisWeekPL, and you could send us your fantasy baseball questions to our email at thisweekplpod@gmail.com. Lastly, make sure that you subscribe to or follow the podcast on whatever streaming platform that you listen to your podcasts on. We're on all of them: Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google. So make sure you follow, and if you have the time, leave a 5-star review if you enjoy listening to the show. It helps us out greatly. Now, let's talk about the news from this past week. As I mentioned in the intro, it's a pretty lengthy list of injuries, and John, we're kind of in the thick of it now, right? Like, all of these guys have these little injuries that are creeping up, or news are popping out that, oh, this guy's been playing through an injury, or this guy's hurt, and just crazy incidents are happening. So it's pretty frustrating. Have you dealt with any injuries on your team so far this season?
Let's just say four of the names that we're going to talk about today all hit my injured list in my home league this week.
Ooh,
so
that's tough.
This week was rough. this week was rough.
I think three of the guys on this list are actually on my TGFBI team. So that kind of hurts as well. Yeah, it's been a little rough here. So hopefully we can make it through it, but we will see. So we'll start with Josiah Gray of the Nationals, who was placed on the 15-day IL with a forearm flexor strain. He underwent an MRI and it came back clean for any ligament damage. So it appears as if he's dealing with a muscle strain. He'll probably be out for at least a month, but more information should come out soon. However, it's not great when a pitcher has a forearm flexor strain. We've seen people like Justin Verlander miss it with this, and Tristan McKenzie, and we've seen a lot of these weird injuries pop up with the forearm and flexor strain. So we don't know how long Gray will be out, but it'll probably be a little bit. Tyler Wells of the Orioles was placed on the 15-day IL, retroactive to April 13th, with right elbow inflammation. There's no word yet on how long he'll be out, so keep an eye on his status over the next couple days. I just lost Tyler Wells in my home league, and he wasn't pitching very good anyways to start off, but it still hurts nonetheless to lose him because I was kind of excited about having his reliable quality start floor, but hey, we move on. Next, we have Ozzie Albies of the Braves, who was placed on the 10-day IL on Tuesday, April 16th, with a fractured right toe. He suffered the injury after he was hit by a pitch on Monday. He's expected to miss multiple weeks, they're saying 2 to 3, despite the fact that he doesn't need surgery. So, unfortunate. I feel like Albies always gets these random injuries that just kind of linger, and then he's out for a while. I remember he was hurt with, what, a hand injury? And it kept him out the rest of the year? Is that right?
I don't remember if it kept him out for the rest of the year, but I remember that happening, yes. He does get really random stuff. Like,
yeah.
And it's never, like, because he, like, you know, went diving for a ball or, you know, like, tripped running the bases or something. It's like, oh, he got hit by a pitch, and it just happened to be his big toe, and he broke it. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's very, very strange. So hopefully he can have better luck soon. Seiya Suzuki of the Cubs was placed on the 10-day IL on Monday, April 15th due to a right oblique strain. Suzuki is expected to miss roughly 4 weeks. As the saying goes, obliques, 4 to 6 weeks. It's about right for this timetable, and they're saying that he'll miss roughly 4 weeks in this scenario. Next, we have Christian Yelich of the Brewers, who was placed on the 10-day IL retroactive to April 13th with a lower back strain. Yet another back injury for Yelich, which just totally stinks. This guy always has a back issue every single year, so hopefully it's not too serious and he can come back soon. Next, we have Bobby Miller of the Dodgers, who was placed on the 15-day IL. He could return to throwing soon. They're hoping as soon as next week, but it's still not great that Bobby Miller was placed on the IL with right shoulder inflammation. They're saying that it's not too serious, but you never know with these things. So keep an eye on Bobby Miller. Hopefully he'll be able to come back sooner rather than later, hopefully at the minimum of this IL stint. But he's one guy that I was very, very high on and drafted in TGFBI, and now my second best pitcher behind Kevin Gausman, who hasn't looked that great so far, is out. So that kind of hurts. And once again, in TGFBI, I'm just fighting the injury bug. Next, we have Tyler O'Neill of the Red Sox, who collided with Rafael Devers after a play in the outfield on Monday. He left the game with a cut on his head and bleeding, but under his own power, so that's okay. He originally cleared concussion protocol and was expected to come back Thursday or Friday, but on Thursday, O'Neill was placed on the 7-day concussion IL with a mild concussion. From no concussion to mild, kind of frustrating news, but hopefully it'll be a minimum stay for O'Neill on that 7-day IL, and he'll be healthy and back in our lineup soon. Next, we have Yu Darvish of the Padres, who is placed on the 15-day IL, retroactive to April 15th with neck tightness. Jake Cronenworth of the Padres has missed 2 straight games due to calf tightness. He's not expected to need an IL stint, but we'll hopefully find out more about the severity of this injury this weekend. Jake Berger of the Marlins was placed on the 10-day IL on Monday, April 15th with a left intercostal strain. It was previously described as an oblique injury, but it's apparently an intercostal strain now. The injury timeline remains the same for Berger at this moment. Cody Bradford of the Rangers was placed on the 15-day IL on Sunday, April 14th with lower back soreness. Of course, Bradford carves out a spot in the rotation for himself, and then he goes down with an injury. Baseball can just be so frustrating sometimes. Guy finally gets his shot, and then, yep, it's gone from you. So, unfortunate for Cody Bradford. Robert Stevenson of the Angels was placed on the 15-day IL and will miss the entire 2024 season due to an elbow injury. The Angels will announce more details regarding Stevenson's injury this weekend, but apparently they just said it was an elbow injury, and it's bad enough to say that he'll miss the entire season, so you have to think that he's getting Tommy John or something of the sort. Ke'Bryan Hayes of the Pirates has missed two straight games due to back tightness. Brett Beatty of the New York Mets missed one game due to a hamstring injury. He's not expected to need an IL stint, but will most likely miss the next few games. Keep an eye on Beatty's status over this weekend. Eduardo Rodriguez of the Diamondbacks was transferred to the 60-day IL with lat tightness. He was originally supposed to come back relatively soon, but now he'll miss the next several months. Tristan McKenzie of the Guardians has been pitching through a torn ligament in his right elbow. Maybe that's why he's had a few rough starts so far this season, but man, why pitch through something like that? I know he opted not to get Tommy John surgery last season, but you've been pitching through a torn ligament in your right elbow. Just crazy news to come out of nowhere. So hopefully Tristan McKenzie will be okay. Justin Verlander of the Astros is set to make his season debut on Friday. Obviously, he'll have already made the start by the time that you're listening to this podcast. So hopefully he looked good and healthy. Verlander is returning from a rehab program for right shoulder inflammation. And last but not least, some good news. Jack Leiter was called up by the Rangers on Thursday and made his MLB debut against the Tigers. Unfortunately, it didn't go too well, but welcome to the big leagues anyways, Jack. John, is there anything left for you to say about this list of injured folk?
Yeah, the Tyler O'Neill one really hurts because he was actually arguably one of the best outfielders this season on my fantasy team, and that hurt a lot. But Cody Bradford, really, really tough spot there. I ended up having to put him on IL and then kick him off my team entirely in my home league because I didn't have enough IL spots. He's a guy who looked really good his first three starts. Ironically, of course, that means the Dodgers and the Texas Rangers have really elite IL rotations.
Yep.
It's really unfortunate for a guy who looked like he was putting everything together, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, he's hurt. So hopefully when he comes back that there'll be some room for him on that rotation. But there's so many guys that are going to be coming back healthy for that Texas Rangers rotation. It's going to be interesting to see how they, you know, basically fit what, 8-9 pitchers for five spots. So definitely a story to keep following as the season goes on.
Yeah, I mean, when you have DeGrom and Scherzer on your IL, you know that you have a chance to have a special rotation when they come back. So we'll have to follow that closely and see how they do. But yeah, Tyler O'Neill, that one hurt too, because I had him in a few places and he has been one of the best players in fantasy baseball right now. So it's rough to see him go down. Even Rafael Devers, who collided with him, he didn't really get hurt after this collision, but he's had a few injuries already this season. Like, he just had an MRI on Thursday that revealed that he has a bone bruise on his knee. Just a lot of banged up moments for Rafael Devers. So hopefully the Red Sox can get something together because they've already lost Story. They have O'Neill out. Devers is hurt a little bit. So, man, they really need to figure some stuff out. Garrett Whitlock also went on the IL, I forgot to mention. So, yeah, a lot of bad things happening for the Red Sox. Hopefully they can right the ship a little bit. Now, before we get into the player performances from this past week, we will take a short break and we will be back after this. We are back and it's time to talk about the player performances from this past week in fantasy, starting with the weekend, which was April 12th to April 14th. John, who performed well on the batter side of things?
Thanks to Ryan Amore, Kevin O'Brien, and Kyle Stanzel for writing the hitter recaps this weekend. Shohei Ohtani of the Los Angeles Dodgers, man, that's weird to say, isn't it? 3-for-5, 2 doubles, a home run, a run, and an RBI on Friday. We honestly haven't talked too much about Shohei this season in terms of player performances. And honestly, if you look at it, it's actually been a really good start to the season for him. The homer and the 2 doubles last Friday put him at 15 total extra base hits on the season, which actually still leads the league a week later, despite the fact that Ohtani has hit singles this entire week. Granted, he also had the 2 extra games thanks to the Soul Series, but he's been hitting really well. On the season, he's in the 90th percentile for runs, steals, average, OBP, and slugging. So, yeah, really, really good contributor. The RBIs, funny enough, are kind of the one stat that's down for him, but considering he's batting second and Mookie seems to bat himself in just fine most of the time, that's a fun situation for the Dodgers. Moving on to Saturday, Kyle Schwarber of the Phillies went 3-for-3 with a home run, 2 runs, an RBI, and 2 walks. Schwarber's value is always going to be dinged by the fact that he has generally a poor average. He is above the Mendoza line right now, and also because he's batting leadoff, so he doesn't really have as many RBI chances in that hot Phillies lineup. That being said, though, Schwarber kind of fixes that himself by, you know, hitting solo homers, so if he can't get RBIs, he can at least bat himself in. He went 3-for-3 with 2 walks, which is a really good showing for the OBP King as well. That all being said, it's been pretty slow for Schwarber in terms of starting this season, especially when you look at his ratios. He hasn't really been doing super hot in average, which we expect, but he also hasn't been doing that great in OBP either. But he still has 13 runs and 5 homers on the season, so he's still contributing in a helpful way for your fantasy teams. And then finally, Sunday, Rene Pinto of the Tampa Bay Rays. He's a catcher there, if you didn't know. He went 2-for-4 with 2 home runs, 2 runs, and 4 RBIs. The only reason I even know Pinto's name is because I drafted him as my catcher in the worst ball league that Lee and I are in. And, well, this is the one performance I guess I didn't want to see. But that being said, I wouldn't necessarily go out and grab Pinto if you're looking for some cheap catcher power. Other than this game, he's only managed 1 other RBI and 2 more runs in 0 homers. So, not really doing too much there. He's played 14 out of 20 games for the Rays, so at least he's getting everyday playing time, but unfortunately he's not doing too much with that time. That being said, it's nice to see a performance from like this from Pinto, but you know, he's kind of a journeyman 27-year-old catcher, so it's hard to really say that he's going to have any major fantasy impact for the rest of the season.
Yeah, so for Ohtani, it's crazy. We haven't talked about him too much because usually we have to talk about him succeeding as a batter and as a pitcher. So yep. Now we don't have to do the pitcher ones right now. So yeah, that's why we haven't talked about him too much. But yeah, Ohtani's been just pretty good. So I think his numbers are going to start to correlate with how good he's actually been very soon. And we'll start to talk about him more often. But yeah, that Dodgers lineup, it's just so scary. I know we say it every single time we talk about a Dodgers player, but that front three, Mookie Betts, Shohei Ohtani, and Freddie Freeman, is just the scariest thing you can even imagine. I mean, those are three elite all-star hitters that can legitimately win an MVP award back to back to back. And that is scary. I'm waiting for the day that Betts, Ohtani, and Freeman go back to back to back home runs. I just want to see that really badly. I think that would be really cool. So I'm looking forward to that day. And then for Kyle Schwarber, I was going to mention this on the Wednesday portion, but he also hit 2 home runs on Wednesday. So he's heating up for sure. It's someone that kind of goes in waves. When he starts to get hot, he rides that out. And then when he's not that hot, he's just getting on base and scoring a little bit of runs, doing the normal leadoff thing that leadoff hitters do. So it's nice to see Schwarber heating up a little bit and getting those home runs that you drafted him for. And then, yeah, Rene Pinto. Hey, great game, buddy. But that's all I'm going to give you because not much to say about you.
Yeah, exactly. All right, moving on to pitchers. Again, thanks to Nick Pollock for writing these roundups over the weekend. We're going to start with Max Fried on Friday. Atlanta, of course, going up against Miami. He got the win there. 6.1 innings, 1 earned run, 4 hits, 1 walk, and 4 strikeouts. Honestly, it's kind of good to see Max Fried dominating like we're expecting him, that like we expected him to this entire offseason. Of course, it came against the worst team in the majors with Miami. And then, of course, when he started again on Wednesday against the Astros, that didn't go super well. But hey, he gets rewarded with the Marlins again in his next start. Fried's not really a huge strikeout guy. Historically, he's been, you know, like above average, but never, you know, a really dominant strikeout guy. But again, he does enough to contribute to your fantasy team. That being said, though, this season, it's been really tough for him. He's hasn't really had his command. His fastball's kind of all over the place. He has an 11.3% walk rate. I believe he's like a 15% strikeout rate, which is a lot lower than his career average. So it just hasn't looked really good for him. The only real good takeaway from this game as well, besides, you know, getting the win and only giving up 1 run, is that he had a bit more command in this one. So hopefully that's something he can build on. Obviously the Houston start didn't go super well, but he gets the Marlins again and he can work on that in that start. Nick Lodolo of the Reds went up against the White Sox, got a win on Saturday in his season debut. 5.2 innings, 1 hit, 0 earned runs, 1 walk, and 10 strikeouts. He almost had 6 no-hit innings, but he did give up a hit at the end of the 6th inning, so which is why he only went 5.2 innings. Lodolo had some really bad BABIP luck in 2023, 440, which is just terrible numbers. But in this game, he was able to limit the damage of the bats pretty well, obviously only giving up one hit. His curveball was cooking, 19 whiffs plus called strikes, and the changeup got 6 whiffs on its own. That being said, though, of course, he faced the White Sox, which are one of the worst teams in baseball right now. But it's nice to get this type of confidence boost back in your first game of the season. And then Jose Buto of the Mets went up against Kansas City on Sunday in the no decision. 6 innings, 2 hits, 1 walk, and 9 strikeouts. I really feel like this season's been the year of the unknown pitcher doing really well, and Buto is another member of that club. He held his own in a pitcher's duel with Cole Reagans that Sunday. Changeups and sliders were getting whiffs. Heaters were located high in the zone very well, so executing that Blake Snell blueprint that we all love. Now he gets rewarded by getting to face the Dodgers, so we'll see how that start goes. I think Buto's likely to stay up with the team, but you probably have a little bit more insight on that.
Yeah, so Buto is actually going to remain in the rotation for now, especially with Tylor Megill being on the IL. And I love to see that because he absolutely shoved against the Royals. And coincidentally enough, Buto and Reagans had like the best pitcher duel, and it was on Doc Gooden's number retirement day. So loved seeing that the two pitchers on the mound absolutely dominate on that day where his numbers retired. So very cool as a Mets fan, and we ended up winning that game as well, so that was really cool as well. So it was nice to see Buto pitch this well because he's relatively unknown. He made a few starts at the end of last season and looked promising, but we never really gave him a chance this year so far. And now after this game, Carlos Mendoza literally said in the press conference afterwards, where he's like, he's not going anywhere, he's staying, he's going to be in the rotation. So I love that. I love that energy. Hey, you pitched awesome. You were lights out, and now you're staying in the rotation, as it should be. That's what should happen when you pitch well. So really happy for Buto. He's got a really tough task ahead of him with the Dodgers next, like you mentioned. So we'll see how good he does there, but his stuff looks pretty good. So the Dodgers are scary, but I think Buto can survive, we'll say. And then it's great to see Fried bounce back. Obviously, it was against the Marlins, which isn't too telling right now because they are horrible. But it was nice to see Fried looking good again. And then Lodolo just dominated in his first start back, which is so cool to see. So shout out to Lodolo and anybody who stashed him because he's looked phenomenal in one start so far. Moving on to Monday, April 15th, thanks to Mark Stubinger for the Honey Nut Churios Hitter Recap article. We start with the title boy himself, Jackson Churio of the Brewers. He went 2-for-4 with a homer, 2 runs, 2 RBI, a walk, and a stolen base. This was the first game where Churio coupled a home run and a steal together. Both the homer and steal came against Musgrove on the mound as well, so it was well earned. So far this season in 15 games, Churio is batting .230, .273, .393 with 3 home runs and 3 stolen bases. The counting stats are there, but it would be nice to see the average and on-base percentage rise up just a little bit. Still, it's been an impressive showing from the rookie, and he's going to be a special player for fantasy for many, many years. And then next we have another former top prospect, CJ Abrams of the Nationals, who went 2-for-5 with a double, a homer, 2 runs, and an RBI. I'm not going to lie, I avoided Abrams in a lot of my drafts this year, not because I thought he'd be a bust or anything, but because at that point in the draft I was usually looking for pitching or something else, and I never ended up with any shares of him. I did think that he overperformed a little bit last year, so I was a little out on him at his price. But why was I doubting him? He was a top prospect at one point, he was in the Juan Soto trade, and he finally caught fire last year when he had a full run opportunity, so good for him. Why was I out on him? I don't know, weird. But this season, he looks really good at the plate. The homer in this game came off of Tyler Glasnow, who's been cruising, and he's already hit 4 home runs on the season. 9 of his 16 hits have actually gone for extra bases, so that's really good. His barrel percentage looks really good. Realistically, we could see a 25 home run, 50 stolen base season from Abrams, similar to what we saw out of Corbin Carroll last year, and that would make Abrams a first round player next year. So I think Abrams is legit right now. Maybe it'll fall off, maybe he'll hit a cold stretch, but he started off the season very, very well.
Yeah, the weird thing with Abrams, I think, is similar to you. I don't think I was willing to pay the price on him right now. And maybe that's some hesitancy in not believing in his 2023 numbers. He's looked the part, though. .295 average? Like, that is really solid for a guy who, you know, is not necessarily known for his hit tool. The 3 stolen bases is you know, it's kind of slow to start the season over 15 games. That's still on track for 30, I think, on the season, which could be good. If we remember, the whole thing with CJ Abrams was that he didn't really run in the first half of the season, and then the second half, he was just like, you know what, I'm fast, I can do this. And I think he got like, was it like 30 stolen bases, I think, in the second half of the season or something ridiculous.
I don't know the exact number, but it was ridiculous. Like, he just ran wild.
Yeah, it was dumb. So maybe that's kind of the same thing here, where he's kind of just getting his legs under him. Would love to see that stolen base number go up. And then, yeah, Jackson Chourio, I haven't really been following the rookie race this year yet. I mean, it's only been, you know, 2-3 weeks into the season. Obviously, we've had some high-profile rookies make their season debuts, but I feel like Chourio is very much like in the lead in the National League. I'm not sure who is competing with him at the moment for who could be leading the Rookie of the Year race there.
Yeah, I haven't really followed it closely either. I've just kind of been looking at fantasy numbers as a whole, and I'm looking up Abrams' splits for stolen bases right now. And in the first half last season, he had 14, and the second half, he had 33.
Yeah, so, exactly. It's so nuts.
Pretty nuts. Yeah, that's a little bit explosive. So as long as he keeps running, which he should, I mean, he's batting leadoff most days, and if he just runs like he knows he's capable of, 25 homers, 50 stolen bases could be a thing. And obviously, we have to temper expectations. We're only 15 games in or so. So you never know what you're going to get. But yeah, Abrams looks really good so far.
Yeah. I also forgot that Michael Busch exists.
Yes, Michael Busch has been on a tear. I mean, 5 straight games with a homer is just insane.
Yeah, it's very interesting, the whole, and, you know, this is a whole dynasty conversation. But yeah, the Dodgers trading him for Jackson Ferris is a very interesting thing. Not that I have any solid opinion on either of those two players, but Michael Busch has been cooking this season.
Yeah, so the problem with Michael Busch originally was not that he was not ready and he wasn't a good player. The Dodgers just pretty much boxed him out. He was just not in the rotation of the infield because they signed Max Muncy to an extension. So he was taking up third base, which is Busch's natural position, I would say. Then they have Freddie Freeman at first, which he's not moving off of that. And Michael Busch, his secondary position is first base. And then second base was something he was trying to learn, but he wasn't very good there. And then he's blocked by Mookie Betts. So, like, what do you want this guy to do? You know, Gavin Lux is there as well. So the infield was just so crowded that he never was able to get his footing with the Dodgers. And I guess they were at a point where they're like, let's just get something for him because we're holding him back at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously that stinks for the Dodgers, but the Cubs made out like bandits.
Yeah. It's also funny because he can't DH because they have Shohei Ohtani.
Correct, exactly. So it literally was just boxed him out of every position possible. And good for the Dodgers for moving him and giving him to a team that will let him play because he looks really special. Yeah. But man, what a flub of the numbers there for the Dodgers because they kind of need help now with Lux and Chris Taylor not being great. Mookie Betts having to play shortstop. So they could really use Michael Busch right now. Yeah. But it's not like they need the help in the lineup. They're pretty dominant already.
Yeah, I think they've got, you know, like we mentioned, 3 pretty good guys at the top of their
yeah, lineup. They're not too bad. Moving on to the pitchers from Monday. Thanks to Nick Pollock for the EC Money SP Roundup article. There was a lot of good pitching performances on Monday. Zach Eflin had a bounce-back start against the Angels, giving up no earned runs in 7 innings pitched. Sonny Gray faced the A's, a little bit of a reunion, and shut them down for 0 earned runs in 6 innings pitched. And Seth Lugo took down the White Sox with ease, going 7 innings pitched with no earned runs. However, let's talk more in depth about these two guys. The title was EC Money, meaning Edward Cabrera, and that's who we're talking about next. Edward Cabrera of the Marlins. He went 6 innings pitch, 1 earned run, 5 hits, 1 walk, and 10 strikeouts against the Giants. In Cabrera's first start of 2024 off of the IL, he looked electric. 17 whiffs and a 42% CSW against the Giants. The fastball was sitting 96 to 97, and his changeup looked like a legitimate swing and miss pitch. Cabrera had always been known to have control issues, which hindered him going deep into games, but if he can quell those walk problems, he'd truly take the next step into being an ace for fantasy. If he keeps throwing strikes and pounding the zone, he's a great bet to be a top 30 SP this year and finally break out. But those control issues really need to be worked on because he had some big control issues. So keep an eye on Edward Cabrera. If he's out there on your wire, make sure you scoop him up because if he does hit his potential, he can be an ace. But the worst is you just drop him if he looks to have those control issues still. And then we have Aaron Nola of the Phillies, who went 7.1 innings pitched, 1 earned run, 4 hits, 1 walk, and 9 strikeouts against the Rockies. This was a great outing from Nola, but of course it came against the Rockies, and I still don't feel comfortable with Nola as my ace. Maybe I'm just being salty from a bad Nola year last year and I had a few shares of him, but if I roster Nola anywhere, I would try to flip him into a better, more reliable ace after this start. Someone like Kevin Gausman, Logan Webb, Zach Gallen, or Max Fried even after his good start. I'd much rather have any of those four than Nola for the rest of the season, just because I know how bad he fluctuates. It's just not consistent. Like, Nola will look like an absolute ace and then look like someone you streamed and are upset about because he is just so up and down and not reliable. There was some promise here from Nola, though. His heaters were located upstairs, the velocity was 92 miles per hour, and his curveball looked really deadly. Regardless, though, after a start like this, I'd be trying really hard to sell Nola in my league.
The only good analysis I have here is that this year is supposed to be a down year for Aaron Nola. So, yep, wholeheartedly agree.
Okay, there you go. That's a great analysis right there.
I mean, I kid, but it's kind of the thing with Nola is that, yeah, he's been a little bit more inconsistent this season. And the big thing is that it just his curveball doesn't feel as good, even though it was good in this one, right? I just don't think it's been consistent this entire season. And that's his bread and butter pitch. And if that's not looking like it usually is when it's its dominant self, then it's tough for him to succeed in a big way.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And also, it is an even year. And Aaron Nola's usually good in even years. Just to go back in time a little bit, 2018, 2.37 ERA. 2019, 3.87 ERA. 2020, 3.28 ERA. 2021, 4.63 ERA. 2022, 3.25 ERA. 2023, 4.46 ERA. So it is an even year. So maybe Nola is just an even year pitcher, and maybe he'll be great this season. But in my personal opinion, if you can flip him for a more reliable ace, not just throw him away for someone like Ryan Pepiot or something, but if you can grab a legitimate ace like a Kevin Gausman on the low for Aaron Nola, if you can make that swap or include bats in the deal, I would definitely be trying to do that.
Yeah. The whole even year thing for Nola is hilarious.
It really is.
But yeah. If you believe in fate, I guess that means you keep him.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Well, moving on to Tuesday's games then. Thank you to Christian Ottoman for the wink and you'll miss it. Hitters recap article. We're going to start with Nola's teammate, Bryce Harper of the Phillies. 2-for-4 with a double, a homer, a run, and 3 RBI. We mentioned Bryce Harper's three homer game a few weeks ago, but it's taken him about 2 weeks to tack on another homer. Kind of a tough start, actually, for, of course, the now first baseman for the Phillies, as his average and OBP are well below the league average, which is, you know, not something you expect to see from Bryce Harper. The only encouraging thing is that all the advanced metrics still like him. He's hitting the ball really hard. He's hitting it, you know, pretty consistently hard. He's having quality plate appearances. You know, he's able to, you know, work counts well. But his BABIP's also weirdly at a career low. And I don't know if that has anything to play with it. BABIP obviously is like one of those really challenging things to control. And usually you see some regression towards the mean there. So maybe it's just kind of a slow start for Harper. He'll be, you know, back to normal in a couple weeks. And then Ian Happ of the Cubs, 3-for-4 with a double, a homer, 3 runs, and 4 RBI. If you take out this game, Happ is barely in the top 50 among hitters in runs and in the top 100 in RBI, but he hit a grand slam in this one, vaulted his stats up, and now he's looking a little bit better, top 25, top 50 in runs and RBI respectively. Happ does have 2010 value. He does have some speed in his game. He is also batting leadoff for the Cubs against righties, and he's also in the lineup against lefties as well, so they clearly like his bat there. He's going to get plenty of opportunities to get runs in that offense, and I think he's still worth holding on to. Obviously, he's a, you know, a top 50 batter at worst. So I think because of that, keep Ian Happ if you have him as like an outfielder 3 or like as a util spot. The only problem, of course, is that he's kind of been only more helpful on a roto basis as opposed to head-to-head this whole season. But we're only 3 weeks into the season, and it's hard to kind of give up a leadoff bat that's been doing super well. So Ian Happ, just a kind of an interesting player at this stage of the season, but no reason to insta-drop him right now.
This game for Ian Happ was actually his first home run of the season. He was on a small list of players who haven't hit a homer yet this season, and yep. Ian Happ broke off that list with that grand slam, so it was cool to see. My take for Ian Happ is he's very undervalued. Like, I wouldn't be looking to drop him anywhere. Obviously, he started a little bit slow, but first of all, he's reliable on staying on the field. 2021, 148 games. 2022 and 2023, he had 158 games played. So he's very reliable on staying on the field. In 2023, he hit 21 homers, had 14 steals. And if you're in an OBP league, he had a 360 OBP. So sure, the average is low, 248 in 2023. That's not the greatest. But if you're in an OBP league, a points league, an OPS league, Ian Happ is kind of undervalued, especially in an outfield spot, batting in the Cubs lineup, which is pretty good. He's a switch hitter, so it's not like he's going to get platooned. I really like Ian Happ. I'm someone who would buy low on Ian Happ in this scenario if someone who rosters him is upset about him struggling to start the season with only one home run. I'd be looking to acquire him on the cheap if you can, because I really like Ian Happ, especially in those OBP leagues. And then Bryce Harper, yeah, just a little bit of a struggling start for Harper. He did hit those three home runs in one game and then didn't hit one for a little while and finally hit another one. But the Phillies lineup as a whole has kind of been very slow to start. Nick Castellanos doesn't have an extra base hit yet this season, which is baffling. Doesn't have a homer, an extra base hit, nothing. No doubles, anything. And Trey Turner is just starting to get hot. Kyle Schwarber just starting to heat up. So in totality, the Phillies lineup is kind of cold. So Bryce Harper will get out of this. The whole lineup will get out of this. And I'm sure by season's end, their stats will look what we expect them to.
Yeah, they're good players, right? And so even if they start slow, they'll catch up at some point.
Absolutely.
All right, moving on to the pitchers, thanks to Nick Pollock for the Highway to the Ranger Zone article. We are not going to talk about Ranger Suarez, although he did have a good game. We did talk about him last week, and this is very surprising. So if you have Ranger Suarez, keep holding him, I guess, until the wheels come off. We're going to talk about a guy who plays in the same state as Ranger Suarez, Jared Jones of the Pittsburgh Pirates. He went up against the Mets, got a no decision in this game. 5 innings, 0 earned runs, 1 hit, no walks, and 7 strikeouts. Jared Jones continues to wow us. I don't know if you have shares of him anywhere. I have him in my home league. He finally put up a start where he gave up 0 runs. That was kind of the big issue with Jones was, you know, kind of gave up a couple, 2 to 3 runs, I think, in his first couple starts. But the control continues to be impeccable, as this is his third straight start without a walk. The four-seamer slider combo really seems to be working. The location isn't great, but he throws the pitch hard. He throws his fastball hard enough that it kind of doesn't matter. And yeah, he's in the 92nd percentile in terms of zone rate. Like, basically half of his pitches are all in the zone. It's actually really interesting to look at, like, a pitch distribution of where all his pitches are, because it really feels like he's just peppering the zone and, like, barely throwing pitches out of the zone. But that's kind of why he's striking guys out at a huge rate, because he's just always pounding the zone. Another player we're talking about, John Gray of the Texas Rangers, went up against Detroit, got a no decision there. 6 innings, 1 earned run, 3 hits, 3 walks, 7 strikeouts. I know you and I both really liked John Gray in the past couple of years, and he had some promise in this outing against Detroit. Slider was earning plenty of whiffs. Four-seamer was a pretty decent compliment as well. But honestly, if you look at his season over whole, he's got 4 games so far. It's not, you know, great. It's a 3.44 ERA. That's not bad. But then he's got a 1.53 whip, which is not great. So those numbers don't really inspire confidence. He gets Seattle next. Seattle, obviously, the offense hasn't been doing too hot. So I think he's probably worth keeping on your roster for that start. But there might be better options than John Gray out there at this moment, and I would not hesitate to drop him for someone who has a little bit more potential.
So for Jared Jones, it hurts me so bad because I wanted him in my home league, and basically I was waiting for Kodai Senga to officially be placed on the IL.
Ah, yes.
And once he was, I was going to scoop up Jared Jones because he was still out there. And about 4 hours before Senga was officially put on the IL, one of my best friends in the league, his guys got placed on the IL, and he grabbed Jared Jones before I could. So I'm not very happy about that. Obviously, his innings might be a concern this season. I'm not sure if they really will be because I think he pitched like 120 innings last season. So it's realistic that he can get to 160 this year. But they're already monitoring his innings with 5 innings pitched with only 59 pitches thrown in this start against the Mets. The crazy stat, John, here is he threw 50 strikes in 59 pitches. That is unbelievable. I couldn't believe that stat. Like, he's the only pitcher, I think, in the history of baseball who has thrown 50 strikes in under 60 pitches.
I think he had like an 85% strike rate or something stupid like that.
Yeah. It's just dumb. And Jared Jones looks so dominant. So many people I see online comparing him to Spencer Strider.
Yep.
And it makes sense. I mean, fastball slider, right? The two-pitch pitcher. We've said it here before. Jared Jones just looks unhittable right now. And sure, he gave up a few runs, like you mentioned, in his first few starts. But man, this guy looks so good. It's just an innings concern. But if you can get him anywhere, I would try to get him because he looks really, really special. But yeah, it's tough, man. I don't know what the innings will entail, but Jared Jones looks great. And John Gray, yeah, if there is something more intriguing out there, like Jared Jones, for instance, if you play in a really shallow league that no one's paying attention in, drop John Gray and add one of those guys, like a Jared Jones, a Cody Bradford, like we just recently had. Obviously, he's injured, but someone like that that's up and coming, looks good. I wouldn't hesitate to drop John Gray for them. But John Gray can be a reliable source for maybe quality starts or at least win chances because he is on the Rangers.
Yeah. To add to your comment on Jared Jones's innings total, he pitched 122 innings in 2022. And then in 2023, between AA and AAA, he pitched 126 innings.
Okay.
So there's definitely a chance he gets stretched out to 150, 160. And honestly, if he just keeps cooking and only pitches 60 to 70 pitches per start, that will let him go further for sure. So, yeah, definitely something interesting going on there with Jared Jones and just how many strikes he's throwing.
Yeah, it's scary. I mean, I would hate to go up against Jared Jones because he looks filthy. One of the best fastballs in the league right now. One of the best sliders in the league right now. He just looks insane. So Jared Jones looks like the truth. But before we get into Wednesday's performances, Thursday's performances, and the streamers for next week, we are going to take another short break and we'll be back after this. All right, we are back and it's time to talk about Wednesday's performances on April 17th. Thanks to Seth Klusmeyer with the Var Show and Tell Hit a Recap article, we start with yet the title boy again, Dalton Varsho of the Blue Jays. He went 2-for-4 with 2 home runs, 2 runs, and 3 RBI. Going into the 2024 season, I was pretty high on Varsho. I drafted him in TGFBI, the PL Winter League that we're both in, my home league, loads of places. I thought that the Blue Jays as a unit would have a better overall year. Well, Varsho came out of the gate ice cold. I regret to say that I dropped him in some places, mainly just the shallower leagues, the 10-team leagues, for instance, for better dart throws like Colton Cowser or Michael Bush. Well, Varsho has heated up as of late. He's hit a couple of home runs and even stole a base. The main concern with Varsho is his ability to get on base. He's always had a poor average and on-base percentage, and he seems to be doing the same thing again this season. However, even with the poor batting average last year, he hit 20 home runs and stole 16 bases, so there's still hope that he can really turn things around and be a productive fantasy asset this year. He's a hot waiver wire ad right now, so if he's out there in your leagues, 12 teams and deeper, I bet he's rostered, but if he's not, take a look, go and grab him because he can heat up. The one thing I don't like about him is that he's batting regularly in the 7th hole, the 9th hole. Don't really like that for his value, but he is hitting better and he'll probably move up in the lineup as a result of that. Next, we have Ronald Acuna Jr. of the Braves, who went 2-for-5 with a home run, a run, and an RBI. He did it! Acuna managed to hit his first home run of the season. For everyone that was panicking and calling their number one overall pick a bust, I hope this calms your nerves a bit. There was never anything to worry about with Acuna. Believe it or not, there was a stretch last year, in May, where Acuna didn't homer for 14 straight games, and he still ended up with 41. But I bet none of you remember that 14-game stretch, right? Anybody who rostered him? Do you remember that when he wasn't the best player in baseball by a large margin for 2 weeks? Nope, you don't remember that because it doesn't matter, and you'll look back on this and remember that it doesn't matter and everything is going to be okay. So Acuña is going to be a monster. Don't have any worries about him. And then Kyle Schwarber, as I mentioned earlier, he hit two homers on Wednesday, but we already spoke about him, so I'll just pass it on to the next.
Yeah, it's funny with Acuña because he's second in the league in stolen bases. He's fifth in the league in runs. His OBP is actually higher than his slugging, which makes sense. This is his first homer of the season. But he actually got up to like a really slow start just in general. And then had like that three steal game, which was great. He's kind of looked like his normal self a little bit, which is really fun and probably at the best time for Atlanta with Ozzy Albies out. So way to go for Acuña for being clutch. And then with Varsho, man, I drafted Varsho in my dynasty league, kind of intending for him to be a catcher. And then when he went to Toronto, I was like really bummed out. But he's actually like a serviceable like outfielder five, outfielder four. Like you mentioned, he still gets counting stats, so there's production in his bat even as a guy who is kind of at the later half of the lineup. So really nice play there, and I think he makes sense in deeper leagues for sure.
Absolutely. Moving on to pitchers from Wednesday, thanks to Nick Pollock for the Bachelor Chalk SP roundup article. We start with Tanner Houck of the Red Sox, who went 9 innings pitched, no earned runs, 3 hits, no walks, and 9 strikeouts against the Guardians. He only threw 94 pitches, so he has the first Maddux of the year. Houck was a popular waiver wire pickup in most leagues a week or two ago. I mean, everyone in the Red Sox rotation was really. However, Houck has always been someone that was hyped up to be a potential fantasy standout. He looked much better in this start against the Guardians as opposed to his last start against the Angels. Houck was missing with his fastball right down the middle of the plate against the Angels, but on Wednesday he was able to nibble around the edges and corners with his full arsenal, so obviously a much better performance came out of it. As long as his secondaries can be controlled a little bit better, he can become an easy SP3 for your fantasy team, so if you have him, hold on to him because he could be great. Next, we have Christopher Sanchez of the Phillies. He went 6 innings pitched, no earned runs, 5 hits, 1 walk, and 10 strikeouts against the Rockies. The Phillies really picked on the Rockies in the series. First Nola and then Sanchez. 18 whiffs and a 34% CSW here, doing exactly what you need to do against the Rockies. Sanchez has looked pretty great in his last two starts, despite coming against the Pirates and the Rockies. But he was fantastic at the end of last year, and a lot of people were hyped on him coming into this year because how he finished the last season. So maybe Christopher Sanchez can be a reliable source of quality starts and maybe wins because the Phillies team is pretty good. So Christopher Sanchez is definitely a nice SP5 around there to have on your team. And then lastly, we have Michael King of the Padres, who went 7.2 innings pitched, 1 earned run, 2 hits, 2 walks, and 10 strikeouts against the Brewers. King took a no-hitter into the 7th inning and ultimately looked fantastic. He did, however, give up 1 earned run and the Padres lost the game 1-0, but still, King was dominant here. All of his pitches looked great, and hopefully this start helped anyone who drafted him feel better about it.
Honestly, the Houck thing was so much fun yesterday. Nine complete game shutout for him. And I think the cool thing about it is, I think we literally were talking about this maybe 2 weeks ago about Tanner Houck. And it was like, oh, you probably should pick him up. I'm like, yeah, he's having a decent start this season. I should pick him up. And yeah, he's been great ever since. Obviously, the thing with him is that slider that was like so similar to Chris Sale. And I know the Red Sox were experimenting him in the bullpen, and I think I like that they've settled on him as a starter. That's been really good. And then Christopher Sanchez, just kind of a dark horse, solid pitcher. I don't know how exactly to term that, but he was kind of a guy who was really high on a lot of draft boards and things like that, right? A lot of people like Christopher Sanchez in terms of ceiling. Of course, we just didn't know where his floor was at. So seeing him get, 10 strikeouts here, obviously against the Rockies, terrible offense, is cool to see. But hopefully that helps him continue for the rest of the season, because he'll need some more of those elite performances to really become kind of a top 40 pitcher that we're all kind of hoping he could become.
Yeah, he definitely needs to stay reliable and getting those wins and quality starts on a regular basis. Otherwise, he's mainly just a streamer and kind of has that archetype. But yeah, no, Houck looks really good. I mean, the Red Sox always have these guys that they have in the bullpen, like Garrett Whitlock or Tanner Houck, that they want to make starters, but then they go back to the bullpen. So it's nice to see that these guys are finally getting their chance to perform in the rotation. Obviously, Whitlock got hurt and Houck has been great. So it's cool to see that these guys are finally putting it together.
Yeah. And then I should also mention, you know, shout out to Michael King. I don't know. I feel like with him, the season really hasn't been like, I think maybe the expectations were a little high for him, right? You get traded for Juan Soto, and everyone expects you to be like, you know, the bona fide ace of the team. And he probably hasn't really been that, but, you know, good to get this start under his belt.
Yeah, I mean, with what he did at the end of last season, with all the strikeouts he was compiling and how good he was and how efficient he was, everyone was excited about this guy going in, especially that he was going to get a full time in the rotation on the Padres. He was traded for Soto, lots of hype. And then obviously he had a relief appearance in the Seoul series and then didn't have a good outing the next time out. So it's great to see a rebound like this. And I think he's just going to be great this season.
Yeah. The walk rate's kind of scary, but other than that, you know, the other stats still look pretty reasonable.
Yeah, that'll settle down, I think.
All right, well, moving on to Thursday's games, we are going to start off with Marcus Semien of the Texas Rangers, batting leadoff, 3-for-6, 2 runs, 1 homer, 1 double, and an RBI. Honestly, kind of a decent start to the season for Semien, kind of similar to Shohei Ohtani at the top. Like, we haven't really talked about Semien too much, but he's contributing in a big way with runs, RBI. His average is pretty good. He's actually walking more and striking out less as well. Just really good eye at the plate metrics right now. Of course, though, maybe if there's something you got to complain about, it's that he only got his third home run of the season on Thursday, and he has also 1 stolen base on the season, which is kind of weird considering that we usually expect Semien to be, you know, a good home run stolen base contributor. So, yeah, like at the end of the day, he's kind of only helping you in 3 categories on a 5x5 league. Instead of being the solid 5-category guy that, you know, we expect Semien to be. Of course, there's no reason to panic. It is kind of weird, though, as kind of the guy who is maybe the second or the third second baseman coming off the draft boards. He's only 8th in WRC+. And then Mike Trout, who actually didn't have a great game, but I have to shout him out because of how good this season has been for him. He went 0-for-3 with a run, a walk, and 2 stolen bases. And, of course, he was the only run for the Angels. So just very classic Mike Trout stat line there. He's been really good. He's leading all outfielders in home runs right now. He's 4th in OPS. Despite all that, he's barely in the top 25 for runs in RBI because the team around him is just terrible. And I'm so mad at Art Moreno for not putting a better team around him. I'm happy to have Trout on my fantasy team because he's still contributing at least in, you know, 3 categories. It's going to suck that runs and RBIs are just probably not going to be that great for him. They'll probably be like somewhere in the 80s, which is really unfortunate. But yeah, he's been so good this season. It's been so fun to have him on my fantasy team.
Yeah, both of these guys are just studs, so I can't really add too much to either of them. They're both going to be great, and they're both going to have great seasons. But I can say that Mike Trout wanted to steal more this year,
yeah,
and it really is showing. I mean, he's hit 8 home runs already, which is already impressive enough because he like leads the league. But he also has 5 stolen bases. And that is more stolen bases than the last 4 years. So good for Mike Trout. I mean, from 2020, he had 1. 2021, he had 2. 2022, he had 1. 2023, he had 2. And now in 2024, he already has 5. So very promising. If you drafted Mike Trout at a discount in round 3 or 4 even, good for you because that's such a big win.
Yeah. I'd be impressed if he lasts until 3. He was still going in the second round in a lot of snake drafts that I was in, but there was definitely some sense where it's like, oh, Shohei's not on that team anymore, you know, Trout is going to be worse, and obviously the injury that's baked into that as well, but he is clearly showing that he still has it.
Yeah, no, I think the main thing of why he was falling is because people were just saying, hey, he's not going to steal anymore, and he's an injury risk.
Yep.
So that's what was really hindering his value and making him go deeper. I mean, how about in an AL-only league for pitcherless this season? I was able to get with my first three picks, Yordan Alvarez, Jose Altuve, and Mike Trout. Jeez. And that should never be possible. You know what I mean? Like that
especially
be
in
possible.
AL only. Especially in AL only.
Exactly. So yeah. I don't remember if I took Trout in the second round or in the third round, but I think it was the third round. And in an AL only league, that's insane. I think I had like a later pick though. So it was like one of those where I got the swing around.
Okay.
And it was close, but I don't know, man. I just don't feel like Mike Trout should be going in the third round. I get the injury risk, but I mean, he's just the GOAT. How do you go against the GOAT, you know?
Yeah, it's true. And he's not that old either. So
no, not
still
even.
Still has plenty of game left in him.
If he's old, then I'm ancient, which is just, I'm not accepting at this point in my life. So
that's fair. All right, moving on to pitchers. There were only 8 starting pitchers today, so slim pickings. But we're going to start with Ryan Pepio of the Tampa Bay Rays, went up against those Angels and got the win there. 6 innings, 3 hits, 1 earned run, 3 walks, and 7 strikeouts. I know we mentioned Pepio last week, but you know, we had to go with a guy who is at least performing the best out of all the guys so far. There is one other pitcher that has performed a little bit better than Pepio today. Unfortunately with him, despite the fact that his strikeout rate is 31%, he's had alternating hot and cold starts. He's had, you know, games where he's given up a lot of earned runs, and then games where he gave up no earned runs or few earned runs, and then he's also been alternating wins and losses. With those strikeouts, it doesn't really help that he's not adding anything of real value in the other three starter categories because of how up and down he is. So I can understand if Pepio's a guy that's kind of on your radar to drop. That being said, I think it's still worth holding on to him. The fastball's still really good, and we just need the secondaries to do really well today, which they certainly did. They got 10 whiffs. He got 10 whiffs on the slider, and if that's something that he can be a little bit more consistent about, and we know, you know, Tampa Bay is really good at coaching up their pitchers, he could become something a bit more legitimate that you can rely on a day-to-day basis. Also, as Lee mentioned, Jack Leiter started today in his rookie debut against Detroit. It did not go well. 3.2 innings, 8 hits, 7 earned runs, 3 walks, and 3 strikeouts. Funny enough, though, he didn't get the loss in this one because the Rangers' offense is just really, really good. The first round pick basically worked with his fastball and slider, had an occasional curveball as well, just wasn't getting any strikes. Part of the problem was that he just had too many fastballs in the middle of the zone, and that was just killing him. It was lit up a bunch of hits on pitches like that, and it just did not look good. So hopefully that's something that he can work on. I would imagine the Rangers send him back to AAA, but at the same time, they're kind of losing a lot of pitchers based on health. So maybe they keep him up to get another start. And I do have to mention this, that Logan Webb just finished 7 innings with 2 hits, 1 walk, and 5 strikeouts in 102 pitches against the Diamondbacks. He did give up a bunch of hard hits in this game, 9 total, but being able to limit to only 2 hits is really, really solid. In terms of what was working for him, you know, the changeup sinker combo, still pretty solid. 4 whiffs on the changeup, 14 called strikes on the sinker, though. That is crazy. Overall, just a 29% CSW, though, so it wasn't like a lights out start, but being able to only give up 2 hits in seven innings is really solid. Of course, you just wish the strikeouts would go up, but I feel like that's kind of Logan Webb's shtick now, is that he's probably around a strikeout an inning guy and sometimes a little bit less.
Yep. Logan Webb has just been captain consistency once again. I mean, besides that April 2nd start against the Dodgers where he went 3.2 innings pitched and had a 12.27 ERA, he's gotten a quality start in every single one of his starts, which are 4 other ones. March 28th, 6 innings, 5 strikeouts, quality start. And then April 7th, April 13th, and April 18th against the Padres, the Rays, and the Diamondbacks. So no slouches of lineups. Mm-hmm. 7 innings in all of them. And less than 2 earned runs in each of them. So
yeah,
pretty impressive for Logan Webb. He is just consistent, an amazing ace that you can have and rely on. Obviously, we wish those strikeouts were higher, but that's his MO. He's a ground ball pitcher. He gets a lot of easy outings and a lot of quality starts, but the strikeouts are going to lack a little bit. If you pair him with someone like Cole Reagans, that's like the best pairing in the world, in my opinion, or like a Tyler Glasnow, that would work really well as well. But I love Logan Webb. I think he's such a reliable ace. And then Ryan Pepio, he can get to the reliable ace section, especially under the Rays wing. But like you said, he's been so hot and cold. He'll have one insanely good start like this one, And then the next time out, give up a clunker, and you're like, what just happened? Where'd that guy go? So hopefully Pepio can smooth things out and be the breakout that we want him to be this season. And then Jack Leiter, once again, shout out to him having his first career start. And I also saw a stat that both Mark Leiter and Al Leiter are the first brothers to have kids in the MLB, which is cool. Mark Leiter Jr. and now Jack Leiter, both the kids of the MLB players. So kind of cool. I didn't know that was a stat, but I saw that on social media today and thought I'd mention it.
Nice.
But that wraps up the player performances from this past week, and it's time to recommend some streamers for next week. So, John, who did you pick out for us this time?
Yeah, I try to have a little bit more fun with some of the streamers just because I think we've been doing too well with the guys that we've been picking. I say that in jest. We're not obviously the greatest prognosticators, but I did want to pick some fun guys here. So we're going to start with Mitchell Parker, who is 1% rostered on Yahoo and 0% rostered on ESPN. He goes up against Miami. And if you like to live dangerously, Parker just debuted against the Dodgers, going 5 innings with 2 earned runs and 4 strikeouts. So he didn't get immediately knocked out of the park against, you know, one of the best teams in baseball. Assuming he survives his start against the Astros on Sunday and doesn't get sent down, he does get Miami that upcoming Saturday, which could be a fun start. He's got decent strikeout numbers in the minors, but he's still extremely raw, so proceed with the most caution here. This is really a pickup for only the deepest of leagues, or if you need to squeeze out some additional pitching stats, before the weekend. The other fun thing about this, of course, is that it's the Nationals versus the Marlins, so even the win chance is not really that high for Mitchell Parker, but you know, it seemed like a fun guy to pick against the Marlins. Next, Clark Schmidt, who is 19% rostered on Yahoo and 11% on ESPN, goes up against Oakland on Wednesday. This, of course, is a much more reasonable option. The problem is Schmidt hasn't had very good starts so far. He's been walking a lot of batters, but he does get strikeouts, and if you're hunting for a win, this is a pretty good opportunity because, of course, he has the Yankee offense behind him. And then we already mentioned him, Jose Buto, 27% on Yahoo, 10% on ESPN, so not exactly qualifying as a streamer, but depending on how this next Dodger start goes, that rostership percentage might go down if someone's just like, oh, he gave up 4 runs against the Dodgers and they drop him. So this could be the perfect opportunity to pick him up for a Friday start against the St. Louis Cardinals, who are just not in a very good place offense-wise. They have the second fewest home runs on the season. They're also in the bottom 10 of runs and RBIs. There's kind of a slight win chance here, but I feel like between the Mets and the Cardinals, this feels more like a coin flip on who's going to get the win here.
So the Mets have been one of the hottest teams in baseball, and I'm not just saying that because I'm a Mets fan. They're actually putting it together. Their energy is unmatched, and it's really fun to watch. So I could see them beating the Dodgers in the series. I know it's crazy, and I know that it's wild, but we have one of the better pitching ERAs in all of baseball. We have a offense that is clicking together. Obviously, Lindor is slumping a little bit, and Jeff McNeil slumping a little bit, but
Pete Alonso is carrying the offense. You could say that.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And Brett Beatty's a little banged up right now. So we have some guys that can contribute. Brandon Nimmo has been really good. Francisco Alvarez was great and has been up and down right now. But the Mets can put together something against the Dodgers. Now, for Buto, it's very scary to recommend him against the Dodgers. But that Cardinal start is obviously something that you want to pry on. And if managers that roster him to stream him for the Dodgers get mad about it because he will maybe stink, they'll probably drop him, and that's when you should scoop him up. But if he's available right now and you need pitching stats this week and next week, I like Buto against the Dodgers and the Cardinals. I will rank this group: Clark Schmidt, Buto, Mitchell Parker. And Parker just mainly because it's a deep league ad and it's the Marlins, so you definitely like that start for him. But as you mentioned, it's very raw, so you don't know what you're going to get from him. But I like Clark Schmidt against the A's, even though they're a little pesky. And I even like Clark Schmidt for his start on Friday, but obviously the podcast will be out after he gets the pitch against the Rays, of course, so you won't be able to get him for that recommendation. But I like him in both of those starts as well. So Clark Schmidt, Buto, and Parker for me. And for the batters, John, you have one name here, and he's been good.
Yeah, Ryan O'Hearn, 29% on Yahoo, 8% on ESPN. I'm actually kind of surprised the rostership is that low because I feel like O'Hearn's been kind of picking up a lot of steam in the last week. Of course, that's not technically, you know, streamer sub 20%, but He should be available in your leagues. He offers flexibility as both a first baseman and outfielder. He gets you exposure to the Orioles offense in case you missed out on everyone on that team. And he's batted third or fourth in that lineup pretty consistently, giving him plenty of opportunities to bat in Gunnar Henderson or Adley Rutschman. And then, you know, right behind him is like Anthony Santander. So a lot of opportunities for both runs and RBIs for Ryan O'Hearn. And I think that's kind of a pickup if you need help at either of those two spots or you have like an open util spot. There are worse players that you could be putting in that situation.
Most definitely. I mean, Ryan O'Hearn is a hot pickup right now. He could be having a late year career breakout. Like, who knows? But he's being trusted with that third or fourth spot in the lineup, and he's doing great. He is playing really, really well. Also, just throwing these names out here, I know they're widely rostered at this point, but in your leagues, if one of Colton Cowser or Michael Bush is available or on the wire, pick them up immediately. Those are guys that should be rostered that will most likely be good this season. So definitely grab those guys if they're available for you. But if they're not and you're looking for a bat, Ryan O'Hearn is definitely the go-to for that. But that wraps up this episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. Before you all go, please follow us on Twitter at ThisWeekPL and send us your comments and questions to our email at ThisWeekPLPod@gmail.com. You can find John on Twitter at TheJohnKe. That's THEJOHNKE. And you can follow myself on Twitter at Regicidal. That's REGICIDAL. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the Pitcher List podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, or wherever else you listen to your podcasts on. And please leave us a 5-star review if you enjoy listening to the show. Lastly, sign up for Pitcher List Plus. By doing so, you can join us in the Pitcher List Discord and get advice from all of the fantasy experts and writers over there. But that's all for this week. We will be back next week with another episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. For John, I'm Lee. And we'll see you in the next one. Later, everyone.